All right. Well, good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for joining, and thanks, Eben, for setting us up. My name is Jeff Leatherwood. I'm a student in the BARD MBA program. I'm also a graphic designer and producer at the Ford Foundation. But we cut ties with the Ford Motor Company in 1974, so I don't think there's any conflict of interest going on with the call. So as Eben mentioned, I'm extremely excited to welcome David Pilauskas, Director of Sustainability for General Motors. David has been with the company for more than 20 years. So, David, if you could just tell us some about your background and your history with the company and how you got involved in sustainability, if you pardon the pun, what drives your passion for sustainability. And then also, I guess, a little about GM's history of sustainability and where that's going.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff, and thanks, Eben, for inviting me to this this monthly call. Really appreciate the opportunity. So a little background on myself. I have a mechanical engineering undergrad, environmental engineering graduate degree, and MBA. And during my mechanical engineering undergraduate work, had an opportunity to get exposed to some things happening in the College of Environmental Engineering where I was attending. And it really, you know, sparked an interest in me. And that's why I decided to get an advanced degree in environmental engineering. But I would say, you know, my childhood and then, you know, the academic career really solidified my interest in just kind of, you know, understanding more of the world from an environmental perspective. So, you know, fast forward 22 years, graduated, and I did my environmental engineering and my MBA part-time while working at General Motors, and I've been with GM for over 22 years. I've spent about half of that in Asia, specifically in China for the most part, and some time in Singapore. And throughout my career here, I've had an opportunity to work in policy, manufacturing, vehicle development, planning, new business development, and even as a registered lobbyist in California. So I've been very fortunate to have a diverse experience, both from a functional perspective as well as operations and geographic, you know, exposure to our operations. And I guess that I've always approached my work, regardless of the assignment, really from a sustainability perspective. I think that's why I entered business. I love vehicles. I'm a gearhead, but you know, in my opinion, the more fuel efficient and the more environmentally friendly, it just makes sense. It's always made sense to me, and that's been my approach to my work at General Motors. And I think that helped kind of lead me into this job at General Motors and sustainability. We have not always had this department, and it's very small. But when we went through our financial difficulties and emerged as a public company, my boss really recognized that there would be a very high level of expectation of transparency and an expectation that we would be operating differently, not just in a more transparent way, but we'd be approaching our business differently. And that's really what my boss and I have built our sustainability strategy around, is helping General Motors operate differently, approach our business differently. But before I get into the, you know, our sustainability strategy, let me give you a little background on the automotive industry in particular. And this is from kind of our materiality perspective. So what are the big issues that we are impacted, as well as we impact our stakeholders on? And I'll just list out a couple of them. One is the industry is significantly dependent on petroleum. 35% of the world's energy comes from petroleum, and 96% of all the energy for the transportation sector comes from petroleum. So we're an industry that's very dependent on one energy source. In addition, we have about 1 billion vehicles on the world worldwide today, but only 12% of the population owns a vehicle. So I know you're aware of the macro trends of growing population, 9 billion people on this earth in the next couple of decades, much of that in the emerging markets where there's where we expect significant growing affluence, and they're the ones that really have the low vehicle ownership rates. So we see vehicle ownership rates growing. There could be 1.2 billion vehicles on the planet by 2020, and a lot of that's going to occur in these developing and emerging markets. And as the world urbanizes, they're being concentrated in cities. So, we're expecting more and more congestion. Another issue that people may not be too aware of, but we generate a lot of waste as an industry. The U.S. EPA estimates in just in America, industrial solid waste, about 7.6 billion tons annually are produced from industrial solid waste. Now, the automotive industry doesn't contribute to all of that, but we contribute a significant amount. And if you add up to an annual production of about 85 million vehicles a year all around the globe, we're producing a lot of waste. The other material issue that I wanted to cover, too, is water. I'm sure you all recognize the growing scarcity of water and the issue of available quality of water around the globe. Now, we're not the most water-intensive industry, but what's important to know is that 88% of our water footprint really comes from the processing and production of the fuels that's used, that 96% dependence on petroleum. So that's kind of a double whammy there. Not only are we dependent on a fuel source, but that fuel source is very water intensive. So that background really helps General Motors develop our sustainability model. And I view our model as kind of the first, it's always evolving, but I'm looking at them in a 5-year plan. So when General Motors became effectively a new company in 2010, operating as first full year in calendar year 2010, that's really become our baseline as a new company. So we've done a lot of great things in the past. We have a legacy of innovation and environmental improvements and the catalytic converter. But at the end of the day, what I think really matters is measuring ourselves against 2010 baseline and seeing how the progress we make from there. So this sustainability model that I'm going to explain is, think of it as really our first 5-year plan, and we're coming to the end of the 5-year plan. So our definition of sustainability is really a business approach. We as a new company need to take a new approach, and one that creates long-term stakeholder value. And it's a value proposition that really looks at these social and environmental issues or our material issues and looks at them as opportunities because the world's going to continuously be changing, and we need to look for those opportunities to support long-term success of General Motors. So in other words, there's really nothing about sustainability that is not in one way or another aligned to what we want to accomplish as a business. So our strategy in these really first 5 years have been focusing on creating long-term stakeholder value. We need to define what value is. Then we need to align our corporate policies, positions, initiatives. One thing that we really hadn't done in the past was manage our business from a quote-unquote sustainability perspective with a global perspective and coming from a strategic angle. So we've been looking at our corporate policies and our positions and initiatives and getting alignment across our global footprint within all of our functions. And then we need to focus on those areas of significant impact. Since I've been in this role in 2011, we get lots of interested potential partners asking us to work on this issue or that issue, and at the end of the day, we really need to be centered on what are the issues that, you know, are material to us and our stakeholders, and define those, and then execute. Execute every function, every employee, at every level of our company. Sustainability isn't something that is thought of, worked on, and executed by a small team at corporate headquarters. It's everybody's job to come in. I guess my job is to make, you know, 213,000 employees every day come to work looking at not just driving, you know, economic benefits, but also environmental and social benefits. And, you know, how we're going to do that is really through innovation, integration, transparency, and engagement. So that kind of frames up our business model. And, you know, if you take one thing away from this conversation, it's sustainability drives value. And for General Motors, we define value in three ways: top-line growth, bottom-line improvements, and reduced risks. So, you know, top-line growth are things that we can do to help incrementally sell more vehicles, or identify new services or products as a result of this changing world to drive more revenues. Bottom line, I think that's pretty easy. Most people understand, you know, energy efficiency, great business case on that. We spend, just in America, $400 million on utility bills every year. So, you know, a small improvement in our, you know, water efficiency, energy efficiency, et cetera, really goes right to our bottom line. And so between 2010 and 2012, we reduced our energy usage by 7%. At the same time, we increased production 6%, and we did that while saving over $60 million. And then, you know, reducing risks. We've got a very aggressive plan to get as many of our facilities landfill-free as possible. And, you know, every time you can achieve landfill-free status and no longer send waste to a landfill, think of a landfill as a stationary source of a future liability. So if you can avoid sending any trash, waste to that landfill, you're avoiding potential future liabilities in the future. So those are some examples of top-line growth, bottom-line improvement, and risk reduction. So, you know, again, at the end of the day, there's nothing about sustainability that doesn't play a role in every part of our business, whether it's designing our vehicles, building our vehicles, or selling our vehicles, or, you know, doing the R&D to design future vehicles. Now, one sort of important point to that is, at the end of the day, it's our customers who are really going to define how much value we drive. So when we think of a lot of aspects to our sustainability, need to be customer-centric. We need to look at those features and performance that they expect and figure out how, through our people, our operations, and our processes, that we can give the customers, you know, deliver those expectations, those features, that performance in a way that has the least environmental impact and or the most, you know, societal benefit. So I think I'll stop there, Jeff. I mean, I've got, you know, more examples of how we're addressing these material issues that I can go into, you know, from a plant and product perspective, but you know, why don't I use those to help maybe answer some of the questions that are lined up.
Sure, that sounds good. Yeah, I was just frantically writing, so many things coming to mind. So you talk about growth in sales of vehicles, and, you know, obviously the China and the other emerging markets with a, you know, are going to be an increasing demand for vehicles. Do you see growth in sales as an inherent sustainability concern?
Yes and no. Here in the U.S., you know, sales have been improving since the, you know, recession 2007, 8, 9. But even when sales were around 16 million units here in the U.S., if you look at the fuel that's being consumed now versus just 5 years ago, the industry, and not just General Motors, is making significant strides in improving the efficiency of our vehicles. So even though we're kind of back up to some significant numbers in terms of sales, the vehicle miles traveled are going down, but not all of that. I mean, it's the improvement in the efficiency that has really driven the reduction in fuel that's used. So I think that's a good thing. Now, yes, there are other, you know, resources that are part of our supply chain, but, you know, our vehicles are about 95% recycled in one way or another. So it's not a perfect closed-loop system, but, you know, a lot of the parts and the materials that we make the vehicles of go back into the supply chain at some point. Mm. And one other point I'll make is just we're absolutely committed to the electrification. The automotive industry is going through a transformation, and you know we're proud that we're very much a part of that transformation. We're the only automaker that has four vehicles with you know, four electric vehicles, either pure battery electric vehicles or plug-in electric vehicles. We've got the Chevrolet Volt, the Chevrolet Spark Electric, the Cadillac ELR, and the Chevrolet Springo in China. And we also have the Opel, Vauxhall, and Holden Ampera or Volt. So they're essentially the same Volt but branded differently for different markets. But we're totally committed to electrification, and we want to be part of that transformation. We want to lead in it, and that is going to help move the industry in, you know, being more sustainable. I mean, frankly speaking, we'll never achieve sustainability from today's metrics and the way we do our business. I look at sustainability. True sustainability is when you can achieve a point in time where your actions are actually regenerative and contributing more than it's taking away from our planet. And mm-hmm. I'm hopeful we'll get there someday in the future, but that's still a long way off.
Yeah, I want to talk more about electric cars and alternative fuels, but. First, can we? I want to talk a little bit more about your process. And you know, you mentioned that you're a small sustainability department. So, what are the challenges in that? How do you, as a small department, sort of integrate sustainability into the DNA of, as you said, 200 and whatever thousand employees?
I would say, one of the most important things about embedding sustainability into an organization is recognizing that different parts of the organization speak a different language, you know, not Mandarin versus Spanish, but, you know, finance versus engineering, you know, marketing versus manufacturing. They speak a different language, and you need to present sustainability as a value proposition in their terms that helps them meet their business objectives. In other words, you got to figure out a way that they're becoming more sustainable and they don't even necessarily know that they're doing it. I rarely use the term sustainability within General Motors. It doesn't necessarily. In fact, in some cases, it may turn people off, or you spend too much time trying to explain it when at the end of the day, you're really just trying to operate your business as efficient as possible with the most benefits for your stakeholders. And, you know, a lot of that isn't rocket science. It's about just your frame of reference. And it's kind of like, you know, our transformation within General Motors of how we approached and now manage our waste. 90% globally, 90% of our waste is recycled, reused, repurposed, or what have you. So we basically look at waste as a resource out of place. And any waste stream we have is a potential revenue stream. That doesn't take a genius to figure out. That just takes a different approach, a different mindset to looking at the problem that you have.
Yeah, I was really impressed by looking at your operations going landfill free. And I, you know, love the example of, hey, did you have a cup of coffee this morning? Well, when you threw away that cup, you wasted more than our, you know, our many of our plants. So is it a major sort of rebuild, restructuring to make those facilities operate landfill free? Is it operational or how do you go about creating a landfill free facility?
That's a great question. So we've established, you know, a set of criteria. There's not an industry standard from which, you know, companies can claim, and we're all sort of talking from the same standard, if you will. We are working with SAE and other standards-making body to try to drive to a, you know, globally recognized industry definition and criteria for achieving landfill free. But in the meantime, you know, we've established a set. Well, first of all, you can't manage what you don't measure. So, you know, depending on your organization, the tools you have in place, it could be incrementally more costly to move towards landfill free. And in fact, for us, you know, it costs about $10 a ton when we first, you know, started down this journey to move towards. You know, it was an incremental cost, but we did that in conjunction with, you know, as we looked to ways to reuse the waste in the plant, and then to couldn't reuse it, repurpose it. If we couldn't repurpose it, could we send it back to our suppliers to kind of close the loop? And, you know, went through, we've got 9 steps on how to become landfill free, and we've actually published that as a quote-unquote blue paper that's available that covers our journey, you know, that we've been on, and we continue to learn from others and learn with, you know, from operations around the world. But it's you know, at the end of the day, if you think of waste as a resource out of place and a potential revenue stream, it really gets, you know, competitive, that the, you know, general competitive nature of people going, and their innovative spirit, you know, going, and you're not only from a business perspective are you saving or making money, you're doing something that's reducing risks, and you're doing something that is, you know, saving, helping the environment.
Mm-hmm. So up front, there might be a cost up front to implement it, but with sort of the long term thinking, you're getting that back many times.
Right, and not knowing the total sort of demographics of the group listening, if you do work at a large business or might plan on working at a large business, there are some advantages and disadvantages of how you manage your budget. So we manage our waste management budget globally or centrally, and that's an important thing to consider when you really get into the execution of this, because who has the money and the budget can drive different behaviors. And what we found is when the plants were responsible for managing their waste, yes, they you know, looked for ways that had a good business case, but they, whatever revenues they earned, funded only what they did. And what we found is, you know, our metal stamping plants, by selling the stampings, they were earning way more money than they could knew what to do with to continue to minimize their waste streams. So we collect those revenues globally, and while some waste may cost more not to landfill, but we still net out globally as a company, as with a revenue stream of about $1 billion a year. So that's an important thing to consider when you're planning this, is how you manage the budget and who does it, because it can have some unintended consequences in some instances.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned you can't manage what you can't measure. So can you speak a little bit about how you measure your sustainability? Would you say that you, at the end of this 5-year plan, are you more sustainable than you were 5 years ago? And how, I know you do GRI reporting. Can you speak to how you measure that? What's the cost of measuring that, and the benefit of reporting that?
Jeff, I'm going to jump in here for just a second. It's a great question. Just to let people know, if you're joining the call, you're with Sustainable Business Fridays, coming to you from the BARD's MBA in Sustainability program. And if you'd like to get on our mailing list to hear about future opportunities, just please send us an email to mba@bard.edu, and you can check us out on the web at www.bard.edu/MBA. If you'd like to ask Dave Tolaskis, and we're talking with Dave Tolaskis, who is the Director of Sustainability at General Motors, if you'd like to ask Dave a question, you can hit *5 on your phone, and that'll open up a line of communication here, and we'll let you ask a question. So, actually, I think it's 5-star on your phone, not *5. 5-star will make you live here. So now, Dave, back to you with that question from Jeff about managing what you measure.
Sure. So that's a good question, Jeff. And, yeah, I do think that General Motors is a more sustainable company now than we were 5 years ago. We still have a long way to go, but we've made a lot of progress. Part of that is, our alignment of corporate policies and positions, and a clarification, being transparent about those. One, we just went through an exercise to reevaluate, modify, and then combine our environmental hygiene and safety policies. So we've made some updates that are more reflective to, our current footprint, where we operate, and we also integrated our health and safety policies with our environmental. And then, in addition to having this policy, now we've created a new governance structure. So that goes up to very senior leaders. My boss and the global vice president of manufacturing really chair this oversight committee. So we've improved the governance around the company. We've aligned a lot of activities that are going to produce better performance. We've engaged senior leaders to regularly talk about this and drive accountability, so that's got that engagement. And then just transparency in positions. General Motors signed the Ceres Climate Declaration. If you're not familiar with that, it was launched about a year ago, but basically calls on U.S. lawmakers to establish a long-term focused climate policy for America. And General Motors was the first automaker to sign up to be a signatory to that. And, unfortunately, we remain the only automaker to endorse that and continue to advocate for climate change policy in the U.S. But, 5 years ago, we would have not taken that visible of a role on this issue. So I think we've come a really long way in a lot of different ways. And you also asked about, so you can't manage what you don't measure. You're right. And we've got a commitment of transparency. So one of the ways that I'm confident we're moving, toward being more sustainable is the 9 commitments that we established from our manufacturing operations. That's energy, water, waste, air, volatile organic carbon compound emissions, community engagement, landfill free. And then we also establish some product commitments around electrification, fuel efficiency, and tailpipe CO2 emissions. And so we're disclosing that in our sustainability report. We do use the GRI framework, the Global Reporting Framework, as a tool. I think it's a very important framework. One, it's the most widely used framework for sustainability reporting, so it provides some credibility. And it provides a great guidance to those companies doing sustainability reporting to make sure they're covering and reporting on the most important issues. So, it helps companies talk, measure, and disclose on the issues that are most important to them and their stakeholders. At the end of the day, we view our sustainability, and we've gone through an evolution, and we'll continue evolving, but right now we look at it as a business tool. Our first couple sustainability reports pretty much had everything, including the kitchen sink, in it. I mean, but it was purposeful. We were a new company, 2010, first year operations. We really wanted to establish that baseline. We wanted to reintroduce our stakeholders to General Motors and everything it's doing. At the end of the day, that makes for a pretty long report. And again, GRI was a good framework to help us really focus in on what are the important issues that we should be really going into detail. And so now our report is focused on 10 material issues, and we use that as a tool to engage four key main stakeholders, investors, fleet customers, NGOs, primarily environmental NGOs that are interested in our business, and then attracting new talent, our employees, retaining our employees, and attracting new talent. There's never been a day on a campus when I've been doing interviewing where I haven't been asked, or one of my colleagues from a different function hasn't been asked, what are we doing to make our company a more responsible company? What are we doing to be more environmentally friendly or sustainability? So it's a tool to help us engage with those four key stakeholders.
Mm-hmm. So, Jeff,
can I jump in with a question? And also, I'd like to ask folks again, if you'd like to ask a question for Dave, just hit 5-star on your phone, and that'll enable you to do that. So, Dave, my question is, you're working with a company with a long history, and one to which, sustainability doesn't necessarily come naturally. So the car companies have a history, for example, of fighting efficiency standards over the years. But recently there was a real sort of switch, and suddenly it seemed as if there was sort of a recognition that they actually needed to embrace those. And I'm wondering, has there been some sort of kind of watershed moment over the last 10 years? I mean, of course, you had a CEO 5 years ago who sort of didn't believe that climate change was real, and then you had one that really thought it was real. So has there been some kind of shift in the last 5 or 6 years that you're seeing where the companies are saying, sustainability is not longer something we want to resist. It's something we need to embrace if we're going to survive and thrive in the 21st century. And then kind of related, you mentioned sort of subsidiary services and other kinds of opportunities rising out of for top-line growth. If you could talk about a couple of those and maybe any interest in moving out of single passenger vehicles and more into the transit space? Are those conversations happening?
Sure. So on your first question about, lots of things, but probably the biggest is, effectively a near-death experience for corporation going through bankruptcy. Everything's on the table. And combine that with new leadership, What does Einstein call insanity? You know, doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. So that's pretty much what was happening. And, you know, going through bankruptcy, getting new leadership, we need to do things differently. The world has changed, continues to change, and there are some real challenges out there. This isn't like, you know, we're not living in a world now where there's one state, you know, in one country that's, you know, being significantly more aggressive in maybe regulating industries. I mean, when it comes to fuel economy regulations, you know, everywhere from the U.S. to Europe to Japan to Korea to China, even Saudi Arabia is now working on very stringent fuel economy regulations. So, it's a combination of a lot of things, but we either needed to be at that meeting, contributing in a positive way, listening to stakeholders, including governments, and wanting to be a part of the solution as opposed to a barrier to the solution. We were a barrier for a really long time, and we almost went out of business because of that mindset. So, yes, we've and significantly transformed because of that experience. So, Eben, I think you asked something in between, but I'll jump to the last question you asked. So might General Motors be going into different areas of business? You talked about top-line growth. So, yeah, couple things. In our traditional areas of business, today's kind of traditional car, how can we create top-line growth? I'd say here in the U.S., Chevrolet has been a real leader in that aspect, from developing what we call the Ecologic label, which was a label that talked about the environmental attributes of that particular model before the road, on the road, and after the road. And it wasn't saying this vehicle is better than other vehicles. It's just saying, listen, to interested consumers, if you're interested in this information, we designed this vehicle to, be as efficient, utilize the most advanced fuel efficiency technologies, movable air shutters at highway speed to reduce drag, or the transmission in this vehicle comes from a facility that's landfill free. So it's just an opportunity to engage a key stakeholder on a topic that was important to us and possibly important to or is an important topic to a growing number of consumers. And then there was another one, even which you're very familiar with, and that's the Chevrolet Carbon Reduction Initiative. And Chevrolet made a commitment to voluntarily retire 8 million metric tons of verified carbon credits. And it wasn't doing that to offset its emissions. It really was doing that to enable it to engage with this niche group of consumers that, believed climate change was real and understood carbon, understood, how that contributes to global warming, and to be part of the solution. And we did it at the same time that we were launching the electric, the Chevrolet Volt. So if you can think about if you want to change somebody's perception of you or your brand, if you keep talking to them, one way, or the same way over and over and over, it becomes white noise. So in order to really change perceptions, you have to engage those people in multiple different ways, through social media, through print, through products, through educated sales force, and through, participation in the carbon market for this group of stakeholders or customers who, frankly speaking, people who believe in climate change and understood the carbon markets, it's a safe assumption that Chevrolet was not their first vehicle of consideration and, in fact, may not have been even a vehicle they considered at all. So this hopefully changed their perception to the brand, engaged them on a topic that they were passionate about, and perhaps Chevrolet moved into their consideration set. So if it did, you know, and we sold a few incremental vehicles because of it, that's top-line growth.
Yeah. Great, Dave. Thanks. We do have a caller who would like to ask a question. So if you are calling in from 914-469-4884, you are live.
Yes. Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead. Ask your question.
Great.
For Dave.
Thank you. I might have missed this, but you started the program in 2010, so you're 3 to 4 years in the program right now. Have you seen a return on the investments?
Great question. So just a bit more background. We launched it in 2010. We made a commitment of retiring 8 million metric tons. We've contracted with over two dozen different projects across America worth 7.6 million metric tons. So we're really close to achieving our goal. Of those, we've retired over 3 million metric tons. And we'll be getting a lot more in this short period of time. A lot of them come in around the first quarter of the year. So we expect in a short period of time, we'll almost double the amount of retirements. So have we seen has it been a positive business case? The answer is yes and no. Anecdotally, we have a lot of evidence and stories where we have changed people's perception of the brand. We track, from a metrics perspective, we track how do people perceive Chevrolet as an environmental friendly brand. Social chatter and website visits to our website. So the good news is that our website visits have been consistent. So with minimal marketing and communications around the program, we see a consistent number of visitors. And it's enough that we know that these aren't regular visitors. These are people coming because if you type in Carbon or Chevrolet, we're going to jump to the top of that list. Whenever we do communicate the program, we've seen a growth in the number of retweets and postings on it, and we see it globally, actually, as well. Are those translating into sales? Hard to tell. When it comes to being a more environmentally friendly brand, there's so many things that come into play. It's hard to really determine what effect this specific program had on it. The perception of the brand being environmentally friendly has not changed as much as we would have hoped, just in general, but it has incrementally moved up a little bit. And, again, hard to tell how much this exact program had on it, but we have seen it trending in the right direction. So I guess, you know, the business case from that perspective is a little bit mixed, but we've learned a lot from this program. And I sometimes use the analogy of, comparing to R&D. General Motors spends over $7 billion a year on R&D. You know, not every single one of the programs that we're working on is going to be commercialized and make it on a vehicle. But we learn a lot from it. This is kind of a marketing R&D program for us. We will have spent at the end of this nearly $40 million on this project. We have changed some people's perceptions, but have we made a return on that $40 million? Not based on a pure financial perspective, but we've learned a lot. And Chevrolet, you know, in particular, I think understands, learned a lot of lessons around marketing and cause marketing and other things that will benefit it for a long period of time.
Great. So sort of the third part of Heben's question, going back to that a little bit, we, in sort of the sustainability space, we know that fossil fuels are finite, and I think we'd all rather get rid of them sooner rather than later. So I'd like to hear about, and we also know, of course, that there's not really a single answer to any of this. I think there's a lot of different solutions. And you mentioned that GM was committed to electric vehicles and have 4 electric vehicles on the road. And of course, the great thing about electricity is that if it's manufactured cleanly, you know, there's many different ways of getting that electricity. I was wondering if in that R&D budget are other methods of energy being pursued, and to the end of Eben's question, is there any research being done in General Motors sort of entering into the public transportation space?
Yeah, thank you. So on the R&D, I think one technology that we've been working on for a while, and I think it's kind of electrification 2.0. So right now, electric vehicles are basically using electricity, electrons from the grid, storing them on a battery, and then using those stored electrons to power the vehicle over a certain distance. In the future, you know, we think fuel cells will power electric vehicles. Instead of electrons from the grid, there'll be electrons created on the vehicle from fuel cell technology. So fuel cell is an electric vehicle. It just so happens that the electricity is made on board via a fuel cell. So we're investing a lot in that technology. We're on our third generation fuel cell stack. We've reduced, you know, moving parts by nearly 50%. We've reduced the cost nearly a magnitude. It's still very expensive, but, you know, our early stacks were like $1 million a piece. Now they're down to like $100,000 a piece. We've got a partnership with Honda that we announced late last year to help bring those costs down even more. Infrastructure is a big barrier. The infrastructure is very costly, but lots of research going in on that aspect as well. So we're part of that, and that's going to continue the transformation of the automotive industry toward electrification for many years to come. Batteries today, fuel cells tomorrow. In terms of new products and services, yes, it's, you know, I mentioned one of the material issues is the growth of the total vehicle park across the world, growing from 1 billion vehicles today to 1.2, and a lot of that growth happening in emerging markets, where that they also happen to be the countries that have the most mega cities in the world. So the Beijing, Bangkok, Bangladesh, those, you know, cities are, you know, the highways and inner city freeways are becoming parking lots. So the value proposition from personal mobility of safety, security, convenience, et cetera, that is quickly diminishing when you have congestion. So we are looking at new products, new technologies, and new services. Technologies like vehicle-to-vehicle communications, helping vehicles take advantage of the electronics that are already on the vehicles and have them start driving themselves so that you can avoid accidents, which contribute a lot to congestion. Small products, small urban city type products. We demonstrated one of those at the 2010 World Expo in China called the Envy electric networked vehicle. It was autonomous capable, and we continue to demonstrate that in China. We've got a partnership and a technology demo project going on at Tianjin Eco City just outside Beijing, where they're looking at, you know, instead of cities being designed around vehicles, you know, this is a city that's being planned, and that, you know, the Envy is a part of the city. It can be privately owned or it could be integrated into the mass transit system. One of the most difficult things, one of the biggest barriers, rather, to, you know, public transportation is that last mile or last half mile. If it's raining, people don't want to walk a half a mile or a mile to the bus stop, to the subway stop. These small, electrically powered, networked vehicles that are capable of autonomous driving, they can be those little concierge, those little taxi services that public transit systems can use to help solve that last, you know, mile issue. And then in terms of services, we've got a demonstration project. We haven't, it's public, but we haven't talked about it too much yet. And it's a fleet of 30 electric Sparks on the campus of Google. So we're partnering with Google and another company, Local Motion, and providing kind of car sharing services through that collaboration and testing it out there. And we'll be talking a lot more about it when we get more data, the benefits from that car sharing model in the next couple months. And then we also have an equity relationship with Relay Rides, which is a peer-to-peer car sharing program, but we've ended sort of commercial relationships. They've decided, for a variety of reasons, but their business model is a little bit less, more getting, you know, people in neighborhoods to share their cars and more identifying fleets like parked vehicles at airports. So our technology that's embedded on the vehicle doesn't play as a contributing role as it did if you're trying to get neighbors to share with each other. But anyhow, again, we learn from that relationship and we continue to support Relay Rides and we're looking at other, you know, car sharing, peer-to-peer sharing type models.
Dave, we're coming up on the end of the hour, and I want to thank you and Jeff Leatherwood. Jeff has been our host today, our student host from the MBA program at Bard's MBA in Sustainability. We've got Dave Stangus, who is Director of Sustainability from Campbell Soup, coming on the line 4th Friday of March, so look for an email blast about that. It's really heartening to sort of understand and think through the ways that this vision of sustainability is engaging big companies that have been around for a long time and helping them rethink their business model. And so, Dave, I know you're beavering away in a very big company, and I'm sure that there are elements of the culture that persist and that might even resist these ideas. But we just want to really tip our hats to you for that hard work and that very important work. So, you know, sustainability happens in small startups, but it's exciting to see it happening in companies like General Motors. Very exciting to see that happening. So, Jeff, do you have a last question for Dave?
Yeah, a little bit, and sort of a last final comment. You know, I grew up in Southern California, and car culture and driving is all very inherent to my nature, and I love it maybe more than some of my East Coast colleagues. So my question for you, it's fun, and that's why we were talking about sort of the automation. That sort of took the fun out of it to me a little bit when you sent me an email saying that the Chevy Spark has the, you know, the torque of a Chevy Camaro, and I know that those electrical motors really have a lot of torque to them, and that got me really excited. You know, driving is fun. My final question is, it seems in media reports that the sales of the Chevy Volt were sort of not what was anticipated. And I certainly applaud, you know, GM for continuing to evolve the electric vehicles. I was wondering if you could give any insight into why you think that might be. And then just a sort of a final thank you. And it sounds like a lot of really good things are happening at GM, and I look forward to seeing the great things that'll come in the future.
Thanks, Jeff. And Thanks for that last question. It's great. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, it's all about the customer. For businesses that are, you know, customer folks that provide a product to the you know, kind of retail customer. And, yeah, you don't, you know, sustainability isn't about making sacrifices. Sustainability is about getting more than before. And so, yeah, the Chevrolet Spark is a great example where it's a small, fun little, you know, vehicle. It's electrified, and, you know, we built it so that it's got the torque of a V8 Chevy Camaro engine. So it's a heck of a lot of fun to drive. But at the end of the day, electrification and the key components, in particular the battery, are still nascent technologies for this application. And so they're costly, and they're new. So we want to see electrification become mainstream, but we find even though, you know, the Chevrolet Volt and even though Tesla gets a lot of press, mainstream, you know, electrified vehicles, plug-ins and battery electrics make up like less than 1% right now of total sales in the U.S. Automotive market. So we need to figure out a way to do that. One is, you know, we do know that cost is a barrier, and we're all working really hard to bring the cost of the technology, especially batteries, down. But we need a lot more public education, and so opportunities like this is great. We need to get people to try the vehicles out. We, no matter how different ways we try to explain the Chevrolet Volt and the technology, it really isn't until people get in the vehicle and drive it do they really say, wow, okay, now I understand. This really can meet my day-to-day commuting requirements. And even those, you know, weekend trips hundreds of miles away, so maybe this is for me. So I think, you know, two barriers are still public education and awareness and cost. And, you know, I see we're at 1 o'clock. It's been a real pleasure for me to be here and join. Really appreciate you guys having the interest in the automotive industry and General Motors in particular to invite me to this. It was great.
Dave, thank you so much for joining us, and really exciting stuff. Going from good to great at General Motors. I'm sure you can take them there. And, Jeff, thank you for hosting. This is Even Goodstein. We'll be back at the end of the month with another version of Sustainable Business Fridays. So have a good weekend, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye.